Han discovered that the threads were packed in vials on the fifth floor, and he suggested casually to Murg that they visit that area next. When he reached that level, however, his heart sank. Four armed guards stood by the conveyor belt, watching the little vials prepared by the workers. Four guards? Han peered harder into the dimness. No, hold on a second. He saw a blur of movement, but couldn't discern anything for a long second. Then, as he focused his eyes, he made out oily, pebbled blackness barely visible against the black stone wall. But there were eyes in the midst of that blackness. Beady, reddish-orange eyes. Four of them. Then he saw two blasters, each strapped to a warty black thigh. Era, he realized. Skin changers. The Era were a lizard-like species that could change color to match the color of the background behind them. This ability made them very difficult to see, especially in darkness. Despite their clumsy appearance, they were fast on their feet. Han decided that he didn't want to tangle with them. He sighed. Scratch plan A. And there is no plan B, he thought glumly. Guess I'll just have to earn all my credits the honest way. The next day, Han took the Elysian shuttle to check out the operation at Colony 2. He discovered that he really enjoyed piloting bigger ships. He managed to find a few extra minutes on his return run to Colony 1 to practice low-altitude flying, swooping the shuttle so low that the belly nearly brushed the tops of the jungle trees. Beside him in the co-pilot seat, Murg alternated between exhilaration and terror. When they returned, Veritil was waiting for them in the pouring rain.
The High Priest wishes to see you at once, Pilot Draeger.
The Sacredo led the Corellian and his bodyguard to the High Priest's personal quarters, which occupied a large part of the underground level of the administration center. When Veritil keyed in the security bypass codes and they walked through the huge double doors into the High Priest's personal sanctum, Han couldn't repress a low whistle of amazement. Nice place! Veritil looked around.
The High Priest is very proud of his collection of rarities.
Display tables, shelves, and racks showcased treasures and antiquities from around the galaxy. Sculpture from a dozen worlds, paintings, and other art objects were scattered amid ornate antique weapons. Tapestries hung from the walls. Rugs of exquisite beauty were covered by protective force fields that felt squishy underfoot as Han walked on them. Veritil led them through another security door into the High Priest's personal living quarters. The visitors were ushered into the room by an ancient Zizian majordomo, whom Terowenza addressed as Gunnar Toss. The Zizian was humanoid, but he had wrinkly green skin that hung in flaccid wattles from his receding chin line. His orange eyes were rheumy, and he snuffled constantly as though he had a sinus infection. The High Priest waved Han and Murg to seats.
So good of you to come, Pilot Draeger. I hear good things about your piloting from Colonies 2 and 3. Today our medical droid placed our other pilot, Jalas Nebel, on indefinite sick leave, so you will be taking his place on interstellar flights from now on. Day after tomorrow you will rendezvous with a ship from Nalhutta at coordinates we will provide you with at the last minute. Security is vital, as I'm sure you can understand. We've had trouble with pirates in the past. Have you trained Murg as a gunner, pilot?
No, not yet, sir.
See that you do. A good pilot is prepared for all eventualities, correct?
Han nodded. Yes, sir. I'll see to it. Sir, what's the cargo?
You'll be carrying a load of processed carsunum and picking up a load of raw rill transshipped from Ryloth.
But the ship I'm meeting is from Nalhutta?
Yes.
Terowenza did not expand upon this, so Han dropped the subject, resolving to keep his ears open. The High Priest sat back on his massive haunches.
I gather you liked my display room?
Liked? Han was able to speak with complete honesty. I never saw so many treasures gathered together outside a museum. I'd really like to get a grand tour sometime. Terowenza spoke regretfully.
I wish my collection were in condition to be viewed. Ganatos, though an excellent cook and an efficient houseboy, hasn't the training to maintain it, much less catalogue and arrange everything properly, and I am too busy to indulge myself that way.
Once outside, Han glanced at his chrono and then at the westering sun before turning to Murg. Tonight I'm going to start training you on gunner's duties, but right now I think we're owed a break. Matter of fact, we're just in time to visit the refectory where the pilgrims eat. Murg did not understand.
Pilot not want pilgrim food. Pilot and Murg eat in mess hall. Get decent food, not garbage.
Han shook his head and started walking down the path that led through the jungle to the pilgrims' area.
I don't want to eat with the pilgrims, pal. I just want to talk to some of them.
Murg nodded.
Ah, yes. Murg understand very well what Pilot wants.
Han felt his face grow hot and was glad that the Tagorian wouldn't recognize that giveaway sign of embarrassment. He changed the subject deliberately.
You know, Murg, old pal, you speak pretty good basic, but there's one part of speech you ain't mastered yet, and that's the pronoun.
Never thought I'd find myself playing schoolteacher, but here goes. Seen in normal light, he could tell that she was tall and slender. Too slender, really. 921 had big blue-green eyes, long, dark lashes, and white skin. Several locks of short, curly hair had escaped from beneath her pilgrim's cap, and Han saw that it was reddish gold. She was poking at her dinner, and after one look at the unappetizing mess of gruel-like porridge, limp greens, and flatbread on her plate, he didn't blame her. Han's nose wrinkled as he pulled out the seat opposite her and sat down. He was dimly aware of Murg leaning against the wall, watching him. Han grinned at her.
Hello. Found you again.
She stared at him, then looked down at her plate.
Please, go away. Her voice was barely above a whisper. I'm not supposed to be talking to you. You're not of the one.
Sure I am. I'm just a little bit more of an individual one, I guess you'd say.
921's mouth quirked, very slightly. Han found himself wishing he could make her really smile. He changed the subject to something she might be willing to talk about. It's a tough job working down there in the dark all day long. Wouldn't you rather do something a little easier?
Like what?
She asked.
Well, I don't know. What are you good at?
She spoke with a faint wistfulness.
Well, at one time I wanted to be a curator in a museum. I was going to study archaeology. I knew quite a bit about that.
But you came here instead.
Yes. This life is spiritually fulfilling. My old life was empty and meaningless. When we are exalted, I feel very close to the One.
When she had finished eating, Han walked her to the exaltation. This time, he had little trouble resisting the effects of the event and remained clear-headed. Instead, he watched 921, saw her rapt face, and inwardly shook his head.
How can she be taken in by this ridiculous bilge, he wondered. She's obviously intelligent. Why can't she see that however these priests do what they do, it's some kind of trick, not a divine gift?
Han leaned forward in the pilot seat of the newly repaired and refitted Yelishan Dream, glancing at the figures rolling by on the screen of the Nava computer. Ready to enter real space at rendezvous coordinates. 3, 2, 1. Han pulled back the lever and the stars around the dream elongated into thin streaks of light, all reaching toward a central point, a point toward which the ship plunged. He turned to Murg triumphantly.
Right on course, Murg. I'm getting this interstellar flying stuff down pat lately, ain't I?
Aren't, the Tagorian corrected. I have been reading book Pilot gave m...
He stopped himself.
Me. And ain't is not correct way to talk basic.
Han scowled. Remind me to teach you about articles sometime. Don't I even get a gold star for bringing us to the rendezvous right on the money? The Elysian Dream shuddered violently as something slammed into her hull.
What the...
Han pushed buttons, turning on the rear view screen.
Two ships! They've got to be pirates! Get to the gunner's well!
As he stared at the screen, the rightmost vessel launched another shot.
Brace yourself!
Murg, who had unstrapped himself and gotten up to head for the gunner's mount, yowled as another shot whanged against the hull, sending him back into his seat with bruising force. Cursing, Han yanked the Dream hard to port. Who were these guys? Pirates usually fired warning shots and demanded that the attacked vessel surrender. Their goal was to steal the cargo, commandeer the ship, and keep the crew alive so they could be sold as slaves. Destroying or crippling the ship and killing the crew wasn't cost-effective. Murn, get below! They're gonna blast us into atoms! We've lost the shield! Han sent the ship into a desperate roll, flipping her up on her side just in time to avoid another blast that would have blown out his Quad-X power core. He put on a burst of speed, trying to get far enough ahead of the pursuing pirates to double back and shoot at them. Having watched some of Murg's practice sessions on the gunnery simulator, Han had little confidence in Murg's ability to actually hit anything while manning the gunwale. Han sent the Dream spiraling down and back beneath the oncoming ships. As they whooshed by overhead, he flipped his vessel up into a tight turn. Murg, now! A Tagorian roar and a splat of energy rewarded his command, but Murg missed his quarry completely. One of the pirates had turned and was firing again. The Elysian Dream shook violently as the ship sustained a major hit. Han's stomach lurched as he heard a yowl of sheer agony float up from the gunwale. Murg! Murg, are you hit? There was no answer. All right, you creeps. Han homed in with his Arakid concussion missile, centering the rightmost pirate in the cross sights. Take that! A second later, a bright yellow-white light splashed out in all directions, expanding into a fireball of incandescent beauty. Han had to look away, and when he looked back, the other pirate was hightailing it in the opposite direction at full throttle. Han growled, "No, you don't. I'll get you too." With a fierce stab of his finger, he tracked and launched again. The concussion missile followed its target, but the pirate ship had jumped to hyperspace and safety. Seconds later, Han was standing in the ruins of the gun mount, surrounded by the pressure sealant that the Dream systems had automatically triggered to mend the pressure leak. Murg was slumped, unconscious, in the movable seat. There was a burn mark just below his right ear. Han ran his fingers through the black fur and discovered a swelling lump just in back of the ear. Gotta get him to a medical facility, he thought. Where's the nearest system? Han scanned star charts, then his finger stabbed down. Okay, here we go. Before long, the world he'd chosen was growing in his view screens. It was lovely, hanging blue and white and tan against the night blackness of space. His fingers clicked on the comm unit, and the vid screen filled with an image of a kindly-looking man with a little dark-haired girl sitting on his lap. Han was startled, then realized that this message was pre-recorded and played to every ship on an approach vector. A voiceover identified the man.
His Majesty, Bail Prester Organa, Viceroy and First Chairman.
The man smiled into the screen.
Greetings. On behalf of myself and my people, I bid you welcome to Alderaan.
Han listened with half his attention as the man continued with the vid message.
As many of our visitors are already aware, Alderaan is a peaceful world, a world where we have eschewed weapons and their use. While you are our guest, we ask that you respect our traditions and our laws by leaving your weapons with the Port Authority during your stay here. You will find that Alderaan has much to offer visitors. We have almost no crime.
Right, Han thought, I'll just bet.
And no pollution. Our lakes are clear, our air is pure, and our people are happy. We have wonderful museums, and we invite you to visit them. Be sure not to miss our grass paintings as you fly over them on your landing approach. Our grass painters are among the greatest artists in the galaxy. We welcome visitors to our beautiful world, and we ask only that you come in peace and that you obey our...
With a muttered curse, Han leaned over and snapped the audio portion of the broadcast off. A whole planet full of honest citizens? I'll believe it when I see it. The capital city of Alderaan, Aldera, was located on an island in the middle of a lake. The site of the lake was actually a meteor crater that had filled with water from underground springs. The lake was surrounded by a series of low, jagged foothills whose sides were splashed with green fields and forests. The water filling the millennia-old crater sparkled brilliant ice blue in the early morning rays of the sun. The spaceport was on the far side of the island, and Han swooped low over the city on his assigned approach vector. In just minutes, he was bringing the Elysian Dream down for a perfect landing. A medical unit arrived promptly at Han's request and ran a preliminary scan on Murg.
There is no life-threatening trauma as a result of the head injury. However, we will need to run further tests.
Han watched the stretcher bearing the Togorian vanish into the transport, which then headed to the medical facility. He grinned to himself, thinking,
"This is a piece of cake. All I have to do is tell the priests that I was boarded and the pirates took the glitter stem. Murg was out cold. He doesn't know what happened. I can sell this spice here on Alderaan, stash the money in an account here, and send for it later."
The metropolis glittered white in the sunshine, as clean and luxurious as a dream city. Han scanned the streets as he walked, looking for a particular type of individual. Finally, he spotted what he was looking for. A boy dressed in clothes that were borderline too small, ragged, and not very clean, was sauntering along the street, glancing oh so casually at each passerby. A pickpocket. 10 years ago, he'd been that kid. Han increased the length of his strides until he caught up with the boy. As expected, the lad shifted his weight and altered his stride to brush against Han. Also expected were the lightning-fast fingers that delved deep into the pilot's jacket pocket. The fingers came away empty. Han's ID and the few credits he was carrying were sealed into the inside pocket of his coverall. Han lengthened his strides until he was ahead of the boy. Then, without warning, he spun on his heel and confronted the child. "Hey there," he said pleasantly, holding up the boy's ident disc and money. "Lose something?" The boy's mouth dropped open in amazement. Then he recovered and glared at Han. Then he launched into a furious and detailed description of Han's ancestry, personal habits, and probable destination. Han listened patiently until the urchin began to sputter. Then he waved for silence. "I'll give him back in exchange for some information." The boy glared sullenly.
"What kind of information, you son of a diseased pervert?"
"Watch your mouth, Junior. I just want to know where in this town people go to make deals."
"What kind of deals?"
"You know what kind of deals. Deals they don't want the law to know about. Deals for substances you can't buy legally."
"Spice?"
The boy frowned.
"What kind?"
"Glitter stim." The boy's brow creased even deeper.
"What's that?"
"Just my luck," Han thought. "I run into the only dumb pickpocket in Aldera. What about Andrus? You got Andrus here? Used to flavor food, preserve it?" The kid nodded.
"Yeah, Andrus, we got that. Expensive stuff."
"Right. If you or your friends wanted some, how would they get it? Buy it in a store or a government agency?" The boy shook his head.
"No, man. We'd buy it from Darak Lil."
Alderaanian taverns were much too clean and well-lit, Han decided, an hour later. He'd been to 3 so far, and none of them appeared seamy enough for his purposes. No sign of Darak Lil, either. Han finally ran down Lil in the 5th tavern he visited. He was playing sabak, and when he saw Han standing there watching the game, he cordially waved him over.
"Care to sit in for a hand?"
Han stared directly at Darak Lil and raised his eyebrows. "All depends on what you'll accept for a stake, Lil." The man's expression didn't change a whit as he glanced casually up.
"You got something good, pilot?"
"Might."
"Well, the ante is 20 credits.
Han shook his head. "Changed my mind. Going out to get some fresh air." He stood outside, leaning against the alley wall for about 5 minutes. Then someone approached him.
"So, what have you got?"
Han turned to look at the man. "Glitter stim. 100 vials.
"Wow, where'd you come by that?"
"None of your business. Want it? Give you a good price." Lil sounded regretful.
"Wish I could, young fella. Wish I could. But I'd be a fool to take it. Just no market here on Alderaan."
Han groaned. What a world, he thought. So goody-goody that a guy can't even sell a perfectly good cargo of spice. Murg was released from the medical center the next day, and they made an uneventful trip back to Yalicia. As soon as they landed, Han was summoned to meet with Tirowenza. The minute the high priest saw Han, his expression, which Han was beginning to be able to read, turned positively benevolent.
Pilot Drago, I understand you are a hero. Your bravery and courage are beyond price, but I have ordered a bonus to be placed in your account.
Han blinked, then smiled. Thanks, sir. Tirowenza continued.
We have lost two ships that failed to return from their rendezvous points over the past year and a half. You are the first pilot to get a look at your attackers and return to tell us who they were. What did you see?
The priests were extremely interested in all the details of the attack, and Han told the story as thoroughly as he could.
Well, it all happened real fast, but I'm pretty sure that the ship I destroyed was Drell-built.
Did they communicate with you? Give you a chance to surrender before attacking?
No, they shot first and just kept on shooting. They weren't trying to destroy the dream, because if they had been, they'd have done it. But they had no interest in the ship. These guys were out to cripple the dream and kill me and Murg. I think we need to strengthen the shielding, sir.
I will order that to be done, pilot.
The huge Talandatil folded his tiny arms, and his massive forehead wrinkled as he considered what Han had told him. They attacked just after we came out of hyperspace, like they were waiting for us. Sir, I'd like to ask a favor.
Yes?
My blaster was taken from me when I arrived on Yalicia. I'd like it returned. If there's any chance I might be boarded by pirates sometime in the future, I want to be able to shoot back. Tirowenza nodded agreement.
I will order your weapon returned to you, pilot. You have certainly demonstrated your loyalty and earned our trust by your actions these last few days.
The priest waved a small hand.
Tell me, pilot Drago, did it never occur to you to attempt to sell your cargo and tell us it had been stolen by pirates?
Han shook his head. No, sir, it didn't. Han decided it was time to meet Jollis Nebel, the Sulistan pilot who was put on sick leave. Nebel was sitting in his room in the medical unit watching a galactic news documentary. Han walked over and offered his hand to the big-eyed, droopy-jowled being. Nebel invited him to sit down.
I've been wishing to speak with you for some time, but I've been quite ill and confined to these few rooms where the air is specially filtered for me.
Han looked closely at him. That's too bad, pal. What happened? Overwork? The Sulistan's small, wet mouth pursed unhappily.
Too many missions, yes. Then one day I woke and my hands...
He held out his delicate hands with their narrow, oval claw nails.
My hands would not stop trembling. I could no longer handle the controls of my ship. Too much hauling of glitterstim. Medical droid says I have a bad allergy to it.
Han thought of how he'd feel if he couldn't fly anymore. Hey, pal, I'm really sorry. I hope you'll be better soon. He lowered his voice and switched to Trader's argot. Understand you, traitor talk, friend? The Sulistan nodded.
Not speak, but understand fine.
Han glanced up at the ceiling. Were the Yalicians or their security monitoring this room? No way to be sure. But he hadn't met too many droids who could translate Trader's argot because it was a bastardized mix of a dozen or more tongues and several dialects. He waved up the volume on the newscast, then mouthed, Friend pilot, when hands grow steady, then if me you, not say farewell, just fly off bad spice world, quick, quick. Understand? The Sulistan nodded. Han lowered the volume slightly, then told Nebel about the attack. How'd they find out those coordinates? Jollis Nebel sighed.
I believe that the Talandatil are worried that these pirate vessels may in fact be from Nalhutta. Hutt dispatched ships masquerading as pirates.
Han whistled softly. By all the minions of Zendor, that takes the cake. The huts are fighting against each other, but the huts are the ones who are running this place.
Ah, you saw Zaval, then?
If that's the bloated son of a gun who rides around on that repulsor sled, I sure did. Haven't yet had the honor of meeting him face to face.
Pray you never do, Vic. Zaval, like most huts, is not easy to please. The huts and the Talanda Till, their caretakers, profit in two ways from Yalisha. First, there is the processed spice. But the Yalishan huts must buy their spice from other hut families who provide the raw materials. Have you ever heard of Gilliak or of Jabba?
Han frowned. Jabba the Hutt? Isn't he the guy who pretty much controls Nar Shaddaa, the smuggler's moon that orbits Nal Hutta?
That's right. He divides his time between Nal Hutta and a spice transshipping operation he runs through a back-of-beyond planet called Tatooine.
Tatooine? Never heard of it. Nebel shuddered.
Trust me, you don't want to go there. It's a dump.
I'll keep that in mind. So this Jabba and Gilliak get the raw spice and ship it here for processing, right?
Yes. But lately, I believe, they may be trying to increase their profit by sending out ships to masquerade as pirates and having them hijack the Elysian spice ships. That way, Jabba and Gilliak get the processed spice for nothing, something that would please them greatly.
Han nodded. What I'm figuring is that this whole setup on Yalisha is just one big scam to get their lousy spice processed cheap.
That is not their only motive, Vic. There is another way the priests profit from these colonies. They run slaves,
Nebel said bluntly.
The Yalishans export the pilgrims from the spice factories when they consider them fully trained, all will to resist removed. They are taken to other worlds and sold. Their places in the factories are filled by fresh shipments of pilgrims.
Han nodded grimly. And the slaves are too cowed and brainwashed to tell the truth.
Certainly. And even if they did talk, who listens to a slave?
Once outside, Han decided to try to catch up with 921 at evening devotions and have a few words with her. He had to figure out some way to get her out of that factory and yet keep her here on Yalisha until he could help her escape. He rounded a turn near the Plain of Flowers and nearly ran headlong into the first of the pilgrims on their way back from devotions. They were staggering or shambling along, that drugged, ecstatic look in their glazed eyes. Han found 921 in the crowd and hurried up to her. Hi. She looked up at him in the twilight and said uncertainly, Hi. You've been gone for a while. Han took her arm and fell into step with her. Off-world. Had some cargo to transport. There was a moment of silence before she spoke.
How was your voyage, Vic?
Han was pleased. It was the first time she'd betrayed any curiosity about his life. He picked his way down the muddy path. Turned out okay. Pirates shot at me, though.
Pirates?
She looked distressed.
You could have been hurt.
He smiled at her and shifted his grip so they were walking hand in hand. How nice to know you care. He took her hand and raised it to his lips. I missed you while I was away.
You did?
He couldn't tell whether the thought pleased or distressed her. Maybe both. Yeah, I thought about you. It occurred to Han that this was the first time he'd ever been this honest about his feelings with a girl. For once in his life, he wasn't putting on an act. I didn't want to, but I did. You do care, don't you? Just a little? I don't know. She tried to pull her hand away, but Han wouldn't let it go. He began to kiss her scarred, lacerated fingers. The touch of her skin against his mouth intoxicated him as much as Alderaanian ale. Stop that, please.
Why?
He turned her hand over so he could kiss her wrist. Don't you like it?
Yes. No, I don't know.
She yanked her hand back, and this time Han let it go, but stepped forward to catch her sleeve.
Please.
He held her with his eyes as much as with his hand.
Please, don't go. Can't you tell that I care about you?
He swallowed.
A lot.
She caught her breath, and it sounded like a sob.
I'm not supposed to care.
Han couldn't hide the touch of bitterness in his voice. You won't even tell me your name. She stood poised for flight like a bird, her eyes wide and tormented. It's Bria. Bria Theron. Then, without another word, she picked up the skirts of her robe and ran away. The next day, after long hours of thinking and planning during a mostly sleepless night, Han went in search of Terawenza. He found the High Priest and Veritil relaxing in the mudflats. The High Priest waved an undersized arm.
Our heroic pilot, please join us.
Climb into that muck on purpose, Han thought, repressing a grimace, but he understood that the Talanda Til were offering him a great honor. He sighed. He stripped to his shorts. Carefully, he placed his belt pouch atop the pile of clothes, with the open end facing the mud hole. Then, with a grimace that he tried to turn into a smile, he stepped off the bank. Red mud oozed up his legs. Veritil caught up a blob of mud and slathered Han's back.
Isn't this wonderful?
Han nodded vigorously. Yeah, great. Terawenza settled deeper into the wallow.
So, Pilot Drago, why did you wish to speak with me?
Han got as comfortable as possible. Well, sir, I think I may have solved the problem of how to take care of your collection. Terawenza's massive head swiveled on his almost non-existent neck.
Really? How?
I've made friends with one of the pilgrims, a young woman from my homeworld. Before she came here, she was studying to be a museum curator, and she knows a lot about caring for antiquities, collectibles, stuff like that. I'll bet she could catalog and care for the stuff in your collection.
And where does she work?
In the Glitterstim factory, sir. Terawenza turned to Veritil, and the two priests began talking in their own language. Turning back to Han, Veritil said,
This pilgrim, would you say she's attractive as your species measures attractiveness? For example, do you find her appealing as a potential sexual partner?
Deep in the mud, Han crossed his fingers. 921? Oh, no, sir, she's... Well, to be frank, sir, she's so ugly that if I had a pet with a face that homely, I'd make it walk backward. When they heard Han's words, both priests guffawed and slapped their arms across their chests, which was apparently their species' way of paying tribute to a witty turn of phrase.
Very good, Pilot Drago, Terawenza boomed. You are indeed a sharp fellow, and I shall investigate this young woman.
Han squirmed around in the mud until he was facing the Sacredo. I've got something I'm curious about. Mind if I ask you a question?
Not at all, the younger priest said. How do you guys do that thing with the pilgrims each night at the devotion? I've never been able to experience it.
To himself, he added silently, because I've fought it as hard as I can. Veritil replied,
That is because you are a strong-minded individual, Pilot Drago. Our pilgrims come to us because they are weak and looking for guidance.
Terawenza spoke up.
The exhortation is a refinement of an ability we males of the Talanda Til use to attract females during our mating season. We create a frequency resonance within the recipient's brain that stimulates the pleasure centers. The humming vibration is produced by air flowing over the cilia in our neck pouches when we inflate them. Our females find it irresistible.
Veritil added,
We males also have a low-grade empathic projection ability. By concentrating on feeling good, we can project those feelings at the crowd of pilgrims. Both effects, taken together, produce the exaltation.
Han shook his head admiringly.
Neat trick.
Is it difficult? Terawenza answered,
Not at all. What we find difficult is having to lead the pilgrims in those endless services and prayers. At times, I've been so bored that I nearly fell asleep.
Veritil boomed with his species version of laughter.
Last year, one of the Sacredos did fall asleep. He fell right over. The pilgrims were most upset.
Han laughed with them, but inside he was simmering with anger, thinking of the pilgrims staggering down the path, religious faith shining in their eyes. This place makes Garrus Shrike's scams look like nothing, he thought disgustedly. Now that he'd accomplished what he'd come here to do, Han began to think about how to gracefully, metaphorically speaking, extract himself from the mud and the company of the priests. He was rescued by the arrival of a Hutt, who came gliding over the mudflat on his repulsor lift sled. A small squad of guards trotted alongside, panting in the heat as they struggled to keep up.
Zaval!
Tiruenza hailed his Hutt overlord, standing respectfully. Feeling like a fool, Han did likewise. This was Han's first close-up encounter with a Hutt, and he tried not to stare at the creature's huge, recumbent form, the enormous, pouchy eyes amid the leathery, tan skin, and the green slime that oozed from the corners of the being's mouth. The Hutt leaned toward Tiruenza and said in Huttese,
I received a message from home. Jabba and Jilliak deny everything, and we have no proof.
Han could just barely make out the meaning of the phrase thanks to his knowledge of Traitor's Argot, which included a very meager sprinkling of Huttese. Tiruenza replied in Huttese, then continued in Basic.
Zaval, I would like you to meet our brave pilot, Vic Drago, who saved our shipment of Glitterstim.
The huge Hutt chuckled, a sound so deep and resonant that Han could feel it as well as hear it.
Greetings, Pilot Drago. You have our lasting gratitude.
Han flew many missions for the Elysians during the next 3 months. Several times he was able, with Merg's complicity, to make small side runs to hone his piloting skills and to allow Merg to practice with the weaponry. True to his promise, Tiruenza interviewed Bria and gave her the job of maintaining and cataloging his collection. Han was able to see her every day. Once she began getting better food in the mess hall and healthy exposure to fresh air and sunlight, that pale, too thin look vanished, and her eyes grew bright, her step lighter, and her smile came more readily. Bria continued to attend prayer times every morning and devotions every evening. Her loyalty, her spiritual self, was reserved for the one and the all. Still, there was no doubt that she enjoyed Han's company. As Bria climbed to the top of the dune, the wind grabbed her robes and whipped them about her legs. She had to hold on to her cap, lest it be blown off by the ocean wind. Below her, on the beach, she could see Vic, legs braced in a shooter's stance, his blaster in its holster, which he wore slung low, far down his thigh. Merg was some distance away, holding several black ceramic target pieces. Without warning, the big Togorian flung two of the targets into the air, one high and to his left, the other low and to his right. Vic's hand was a blur of motion. A blaster bolt shattered first the right, then the left target piece. Tiny droplets of slagged ceramic rained into the restless Elysian surf. Bria was struck, as she always was, by how good-looking Vic was, with his regular features, brown hair and eyes, and lean build. He wasn't a classically handsome man, but any woman who'd ever been on the receiving end of his smile wouldn't notice that. When he spotted her on the dune, he ran up to her. Before she could fend him off, he dropped a kiss on her forehead. She pushed him away. No, Vic, that's against my vows. I know, but someday, honey, you're gonna kiss me back. Suddenly serious, he looked down into her face. There's something we need to talk about, Bria. I've waited until you were better because I'm afraid it's gonna be a shock. But you gotta find out sometime. Her heart began to race as Vic took a small device out of his pocket. This is the audio log recorder I pulled out of the dream's control panel. I'm gonna play a recording I made a couple of months ago. Vic turned on the recorder. Bria heard Vic greet the priests and heard them invite him to take a mud bath. Then, Bria caught her breath in dismay. She heard Veritil and Tiruenza laughing and talking about the exaltation. They were saying it was not a divine gift. They were saying it had nothing at all to do with the one or the all. Bria's eyes narrowed in fury, and she shot to her feet. How could you? I thought you were my friend. Vic came toward her, hands raised placatingly. Freya, sweetheart, I am your friend. I did it for you. You need to know the truth. I'm sorry, you're...
Freya's hand and arm seemed to move of their own volition, coming up in a roundhouse slap that connected solidly with his cheek. You're lying. You faked that to make me break my vows. I'm sorry, Bria. Sorrier than I can say, but I didn't fake it. I'm gonna prove that to you. Digging into his pocket, he held out a small black vial. Bria knew only too well what it was.
Glitterstim? Where did you get it?
Light fingered it during a delivery. This is the only way I can prove to you I'm not lying. If you expose it to light, then swallow it, it'll give you temporary telepathic abilities. You'll be able to read my mind, and you'll know that I'm not lying about the exaltation, and that I didn't fake that recording. Here. He dropped it into her hand. Take it. Bria looked down at the tube. I need to think about this, Vic. I need to decide what to do. Vic's words continued to plague her. That evening, when she stood before the altar of promises, and pilgrims were falling to their knees all around her, Bria let herself follow them. But as she did so, she flipped the vial of Glitterstim open. Within seconds, it activated, sparkling blue, but none of the pilgrims noticed. As she mouthed the drug, then swallowed it, the exaltation began. Bria shuddered as though she'd been blaster shot. The effects of the Glitterstim were immediate. Blood rushed through her body like a ship going into hyperspace. Her head pounded. Her mind opened in a way she'd never afterward be able to describe. As the waves of the exaltation took her, she experienced the pleasure of all the other pilgrims in the crowd. Gasping, Bria opened her eyes and stared at Tirowenza, forcing herself to narrow her mind to encompass only his. Images, alien images, flooded Bria's mind, stamping themselves indelibly into her consciousness. Tirowenza's mind, like that of every sentient, was full of surface trivia, wondering what he'd have for dinner, boredom with the ceremony, thoughts of the new security measures the Huts had ordered him to implement, a minor gastrointestinal churn in his middle. There was not a hint of divinity in the high priest's mind.